Das wird on you, listeners. Anyway, so I'm here with Kevin from The Interrupters. I have to say right off the bat, Say It Out Loud, really awesome album.
Thank you. That means a lot. We're super happy with it, and we had a good feeling about it. Every step of the way doing the record, you know, we were hoping that it would be something that wouldn't be a fall off or a dip from the last record, and I think this is what we like to say. We like to say it's just as good as, if not better than, the first record.
Okay. Absolutely fine. Well, the guy who has a show before me and I rarely agree on new stuff, and this is one we agree on, certainly.
Oh, awesome. Well, hell yeah. See, we're bridging gaps of total disagreements.
In fact, maybe the Friday before, I played She Got Arrested, and then the next day I hung out with this guy, and he was like, oh, did you hear that Interrupters? Play She Got Arrested. Dude, that's the song I played last night.
Nice. Well, I'll give you a fucking tidbit. We're going to play that song tonight. That one's made its way into our set, yeah.
Hooray.
Yeah.
Well, while we're at it, how about throw Prosecutor and Valium, Ken?
You know what? We tried Prosecutor yesterday. It's fun. We've been circling in new songs. Mm-hmm. I think we're doing Jenny Drinks today.
Sure.
But we're just trying to learn them all and kind of get familiar with all of them. And it's kind of cool. The cool thing about Warped Tour, short sets. So yeah. We play a different set every day. But the core of it's the same. Like, we still hit the things we need to hit, but we have those couple of songs where we got room to thing. And Valley, we haven't done Valley for a while, but that's a fun one to do too.
Well, where you come from, it's the Lehigh Valley.
Yeah.
If you ever come around Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton, just like an hour and 10 minutes north of Philly.
Well, that's funny. I got a good friend from Allentown.
Okay.
Jeremy, he goes by Beardo. He's a guitar player. Plays in Julian Casablancas' band.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Julian in the Voids?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
Yeah. So he's straight out of Allentown.
Nice. I never knew that.
Yeah. I only thought of Piss Jeans when I think of Allentown. But
yeah.
Well,
they'll
actually be playing this weekend, so come on.
All right.
So this is... The Interrupters have been around since, what, 2011?
Yeah, we started, like... we decided we wanted to start a band, and we started recording the first album at the end of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Now... seriousness of the band was something that we came to about a year or so later, because we were all working on different things, and it was something new and exciting. We were recording, but we didn't really know. I mean, for us, like, once 2013 came around and we pressed up 2 7-inches and we started touring, we got an opportunity to tour with Rancid.
Sure.
That's when we kind of realized, like, we're going to see this through and do it as best we could. And then Hellcat Epitaph put out the first album in 2014. And it's so weird, man. Once you get something like that, like, we all grew up, like, loving Epitaph and Hellcat and all those records. And once we got that opportunity, we kind of had this, like, we can't let them down feeling. So this became, like, our 100% focus, and we haven't really looked back since.
Well, there's some interesting connections between you and Epitaph, Hellcat, and all that, because did you actually record on any of the Transplants albums?
On In a War Zone, I did. I played bass, and I engineered a lot of it.
Sure.
Yeah, and I actually, right after their second record, Haunted Cities, I joined the band as a touring keyboard player.
Gotcha.
So, so I've known, you know, I've been in that kind of world for a while now at this point.
So with the Interrupters getting a little bit more attention from you, I suppose, are you able to record and engineer as much as maybe you had been in the past?
You know what? I still do it as much as I can when I'm at home. It's something I'm really passionate about, and it's... I even have a little studio on the back of our tour bus just to make demos. It's like... it's my happy place, the studio. So, I mean, right before we came out here, I was... I worked on some new Rancid stuff. I work on a lot of stuff with Travis Barker still, too.
Yeah.
For his solo project, and he does a lot of like hip-hop production, and I work with him there. So, yeah, anytime I'm home, I try to spend as much time in the studio as I can.
It's a scoop right there. New Rancid sort of being...
I think there'll be more developments on that by next year. But there's definitely some material happening.
Good to see them a little more prolific these days, because it wasn't that long ago they put the previous album out, if I recall, maybe 2 years? I feel like sometimes they have gaps longer than that, but...
Yeah, I mean, I'm fortunate to be able to play with those guys. When they tour, I play organ for them. So, I mean, the funny thing about them is they still get along so well, and they're like brothers. So I think that's why you can have those kind of gaps. Like,
yeah.
Any kind of relationship you have, when it's solid enough, you can kind of spend time apart, and it's still just as good when you come back, you know?
Well, and even with a fan base, I mean, they could take as long as they want off and just come back and do a show.
I agree, totally.
If you're coming up and coming, you gotta sort of be hitting the road a lot,
yeah,
and releasing much.
And you gotta really capitalize on any momentum you have too, because when we just stopped for 6 months in preparation for this album to come out, and I was scared of losing momentum. And just for us internally, getting back into it, you know, we had to really like ramp it back up, because after touring for 3 years, we're kind of on autopilot. We weren't rehearsing. We would just kind of get home. All right, when's the next shows? All right, 2 weeks. All right, let's get this t-shirt design done. Let's do this. And then we'd go back out. Everything was there. But for this, we're like, all right, we have a new album. We have to go rehearse. We did a record release show. We have to learn all these new songs, make some new merch. Like, everything was almost like starting from scratch again, which was really kind of fun to actually... We didn't know what we were doing the first time around. So this time, I still don't know if we know what we're doing, but it's fun to be able to kind of like, you know, put your best foot forward and, you know, try to do something you're proud of.
Absolutely. Now, you're used to doing opening slots, so maybe a 25, 30-minute set isn't unusual for you. But for something like Warped Tour, maybe an introduction to another audience that maybe wouldn't normally be familiar, do you try to mix it up set-wise in terms of, like, the fast stuff, slow stuff, whatever, or just all fast stuff?
You know what's so funny is, yes, and we're constantly trying to figure out what the best thing to do is, because what we think is best sometimes might not be best for, like, the audience, but... The difference now between doing those 30-minute opening slots and doing this tour is now we have two records. So we got to kind of try to get a good blend of both. But we definitely like to showcase the fun, up-tempo, ska, you know, thing that people kind of like us for. And in the set, and just try to... Yeah, but we do a little of everything, you know, I think. A couple covers. We have Billy from Real Big Fish. He's been jumping on stage with us, and that's been a lot of fun. He plays trombone, but he's also an amazing Hammond, like, B3 player, so...
Yeah, I was going to ask if you were going to be utilizing any of these horn players here.
So. Oh, yeah. Dude, we're already on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, from what I understand, you had... Were some of the guys from Less Than Jake? Did they do You've Gotta Find a Way Out?
Yeah, on our record, You're Gonna Find a Way Out. They actually... was a song we were working on... And we did a Kevin Lyman festival called It's Not Dead in October. It was an amazing lineup, but they were staying at a hotel that was like right down the street from our house. And we invited them over and kind of said we had this song. We weren't sure if it was good, this and that. They came down. Buddy and JR brought their horns. The whole band came. The whole crew came. And we just kind of like, you know, had some drinks, hung out, played them the song. They came up with some horn parts, and then Chris and Roger sang on it, and by the end of the night, I was like, fuck, this is one of my favorite songs on the album now. And it was something that we didn't know was that good until they came in, and it was just the vibe of collaborating with them. That, like, this isn't to sound braggy or whatever, but when I listen to that song, I can feel that positive vibe, and it feels good. Like, you could tell we were having fun, you know what I mean? So at least for me, it's fun to listen to that one.
Absolutely. We just were lucky enough to talk to Chris earlier. I should have known that he was in the background there, and I would have brought it up.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Oh, well. Speaking of collaborating with legends, Mr. Time Bomber Armstrong, whatever he prefers, played his old Operation Ivy guitar on the album.
Yes, he did. That was kind of a secret weapon. He's a great dude just in general, but like, we have such a good relationship with him. He's kind of like the fifth member of our band, and... you know, when we're in the studio together, the creativity happens so quick. And one day he had, like, his Operation Ivy guitar.
Yeah.
And he played on the entire Operation Ivy catalog. It's an old, like, Seville. And he was, hey, let me put this down on this one song. I think it would help thicken up the bubble. So we did it. And it sounded so good. We were like, let's pull up a couple more songs and have you do that. Because it just, like, I don't know. There's something about, I believe in that magic of, like, music and just those kind of connections you can make, and almost like Willie Nelson's guitar trigger, you know, like there's some magic to that, and like having the same instrument, it's almost like the instrument has a life of its own and a sound of its own. So
it's barely still together, but it sounds great.
And actually, it's a pretty, I mean, like, it looks beat up to shit, but it sounds great.
Nice.
You know what I mean?
He's one of those guys, whenever he's involved in a project, you can always tell. Even like Pink's album years ago, there were a couple of tracks like, whoa, okay, that's got the...
Well, the thing is, as a producer, he's a songwriter, and he's a band guy.
Sure.
So when you're in the studio with him, it's almost like he can't help but join the band for that day. So, like, and creatively, like, any great throwing around ideas and having that at our disposal in the studio is something we'd be foolish not to use. And, yeah, he definitely leaves his mark, though, which we're huge fans of, like, I mean, all his bands just throughout the years. So definitely an honor to work with him.
All right.
Now, from what I understand, there are two bonus tracks, For No One and Judgment Day, that didn't quite make the standard edition.
You know what's weird is when we did our first record, we did an iTunes Deluxe edition that had two bonus tracks. And we weren't sure what was going to happen this time with the bonus tracks, but we treat our bonus tracks like they are on the record almost. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I'm really proud of those songs. They just didn't make it in the final sequence, but I think they're on the Japanese version, and they're available out there. And we were talking about maybe doing a 7-inch with just those two songs and putting that out maybe early next year, just to have a little something new, collector's item.
Understood.
Always get the Japanese version, folks.
Yeah, oh, for sure, dude. I mean, yeah. That was a big trip for us to see our album with all the Japanese writing on it, like when our first record came out. And I haven't gotten one of the Say It Out Louds yet, but I have, you know, I was lucky enough to go to Japan last year with Rancid and play a couple shows, and the guy from Epitaph out there came with a couple of Interrupters records and gave me. It was really insane. I brought some home for my mom. We were all super excited about it. Has all the lyrics inside in Japanese too. So cool.
All right, let's see. Looking on, Facebook, you guys received a kind message from the one and only Jesse Michaels on June 8th.
Oh, yeah.
Any plans on an Interrupters Classics of Love tour?
You know what? He's a big supporter of us, and we were lucky enough to work with him some years back. We did a song with Tim Timebaum and friends and him called Living in a Dangerous Land.
Okay.
So if you listen to that track, it's him and Tim singing the verses and the chorus, but that's Jesse on drums, Justin on bass, me on guitar, and Amy singing in the chorus with them. So that's Interrupters, Jesse Michaels, Tim Armstrong collaboration. You know, we played him our record back then, too, right before it was out, and he was a fan and a supporter. Obviously, he could hear his influence in it, but, you know, we stay in touch here and there a little bit and invite him to shows when we're playing in L.A. I would love to do some more stuff with him or tour with him. You know, he seems to be kind of focused on doing, like, video directing and stuff right now, which is cool. But, yeah, you never know what will happen somewhere down the line.
I love that album when it came out years ago, so, you know, I'd love to see them do a follow-up or a tour or something.
I mean, just being that Operation Ivy record so ingrained in my blood, just hearing him sing, it just brings back this nostalgic, amazing feeling that, like, I think a lot of people would agree with me. It's a good feeling.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, so it's been mentioned earlier and many other times about the T-Mobile commercial. Now, I understand the son of someone with T-Mobile is a fan of you guys.
Yeah, we actually didn't know that at the time. When those kind of things happen and you get those kind of offers, it was basically our label hit us up and they said, hey, you got this offer. It's a good opportunity. T-Mobile wants to use your song in a commercial for like, I think it was 12-week term or something. And we, you know, we talked about it as a band and we were like, man, at the time we were in Europe, we were touring and we were looking at our whole thing. We're like, it was costing us a lot of money to tour. And I'm not complaining because we're so lucky to do what we do, but it was like, we were in the red and we got that opportunity and we're like, oh my God. This could actually help us kind of, like, pay all, like, the guys that make our T-shirts. Like, we owe them money. We owe this guy money. We're like, I want to pay these people, you know? So that was a good opportunity, and we did it. And then come to find out, the label sends us an email that says, can you guys sign some drumsticks? The kid, the music supervisor who picked your song, was turned on to you through his son, I think he was 9 years old and was a drummer. So we sent them some T-shirts, some posters, some drumsticks, and that was cool because it kind of gave us this really good sense of validation at the end of being like, you know what, this all came from us doing what we do, and it all came full circle in a weird way. So
reaching the next generation already, my goodness.
Dude, we're super lucky. Even out here on Warped Tour, like, we like to hang out at our merch tent and meet with people, like, every day. And, like, we'll have parents and their kids that are both stoked on the band. And, like, we're bridging generational gaps. And we sing a lot about family, community, and all that. And just, it's an amazing thing to see. Like, parents and their kids together at shows that both like the same band. And I can't believe we're that band. It's super cool.
Absolutely. Well, you also mentioned previously about being in a Michael Moore movie, or a song, anyway.
Yeah.
And just the other day, I saw, I think By My Side, or one song, was on ESPN advertising the Home Run Derby.
That's Take Back the Power.
Take Back the Power. What am I saying? Yeah, must have been July 4th. How the heck did that happen?
You know what? I still don't really know how this stuff happens. It's once you have a song that's kind of out there like that, and people are putting those things together. They're creatively trying to cut it together with music, and if they like it with our song, they reach out to us. And you know, being a newer band, it's such a great opportunity to get our music out to more people that wouldn't hear us. And I had no idea how many Interrupters fans were baseball fans until we did that. We were getting people writing us all the time, like, two of my favorite things coming together, and we're like, whoa, this is awesome. Like, you know, that came together through this company we work with called Wixen, and they're a family business that kind of helps us look after our publishing and stuff, and another great opportunity we couldn't pass up.
I was thinking Hellcat and Epitaph are really pushing you guys to draw for all these things, and it was like, whoa.
You know, we put ourselves out there, yeah. But that kind of stuff, you can push as hard as you want, but at the end of the day, it's up to the creative people that put those things together, you know?
So I heard somewhere, I don't know, that you guys listen to a lot of podcasts while driving around.
Yeah, we do.
What's popular for you?
Well, you know what's funny is we listen to a lot of Howard Stern on XM. We listen to a lot of Faction on XM because they've been big supporters of us. But when we don't have the internet and we have to download podcasts, we listen to a lot of like Marc Maron interviews. Penn Jillette's got a great show called Sunday School. Pete and Sebastian is a comedy podcast with Sebastian Maniscalco. This guy Pete Corielli, they're these two Italians that are just talk about everyday life. It's hilarious. You Made It Weird with Pete Holmes. We love podcasts.
Good.
Yeah.
If you like movies, How Did This Get Made is one of my favorites. There's so many movie podcasts too.
Oh yeah, no, that's true. I'm trying to get more into that. We're big fans of interview podcasts, yeah, with like either musicians or actors or directors and stuff like that. I don't know, it's just really interesting to kind of humanize those people.
Even Shane Told has one. Damien from Fucked Up has one, turned out a punk.
Yeah.
I mean, so many bands. Who knows, maybe at some point you'll decide to have one. But
that thought has crossed my mind, but then I think like, I'd rather listen to him than be the guy talking.
I get you.
Well, you just record one while driving to the next city.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do we do? Like, reporters, those have a conversation about nothing.
Yeah, no, it's true. You know what's funny is I do a radio show every week with Tim Armstrong that airs on Faction on Sirius XM. And it's about, whatever, half talking, half music. We play tunes. We have people in guests. Sometimes we're having these conversations, and when you're in the conversation, you're thinking, is anybody really going to want to listen to this? Then people come up to you and be like, man, that was so cool how you were talking about. And it's like the most arbitrary, like that one time when you guys this. And then I think to myself, the podcast I listen to, they're literally just having conversations. It's kind of comforting to drive around or like even just on an airplane or whatever, listening to people having conversations. I don't know, it's soothing. Nice.
I found the episode of a show where they went through every track of Out Come the Wolves.
Man, that was so fun to do. Yeah. That was a double show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like an hour-long special or something, yeah.
Well, sometimes I drive around a lot, so it was entertaining.
No, I know, but that's, you know what's funny is you're not the first person to bring that one up to me. That's definitely a crowd favorite for that show.
Gotcha. All right, so you guys are playing Europe, from what I understand, Europe for the third time this fall. Any other parts of the world you haven't been that you want to?
We have not been to Japan or anywhere in Asia, for that matter, Southeast Asia, we would love to do. Mm-hmm. We would love to go anywhere that would have us, to be honest. We like traveling and playing music, so we're trying to put together some plans to hit as many places as we can on this record, starting with Europe this fall, and then we're trying to put together a North America headline tour to follow that up, and just kind of as many places that will have us.
Absolutely.
Yes.
All right, so you said, you know, we've got the rest of 2016 more or less covered there. I always end everything with this one. Stuck in a desert island, one album, rest of your life. What is it?
Oh, man, for me personally, I might have to say Beach Boys' Pet Sounds.
Okay. It's
yeah.
Not uncommon. I've heard a few people say
yeah,
that.
I mean, the fact there's a couple instrumental tracks on there, so you get a little bit of background music, but God only knows it's like my favorite song of all time. And I think when you pick a favorite song, it's got to be a song that you never get sick of and you can hear anytime. Even if someone's doing a bad cover of it at a wedding, you love it, you know? So That's kind of, yeah. That would be off the top of my head, that record. Or Rubber Soul by the Beatles. Rubber Soul's a really good one.
Can't go wrong.
As You Won't See Me and all that. Yeah, one of those records. I can't pick one, man. I'd have to make a mixtape and bring a mixtape. I'd make a fun Desert Island mixtape. That's what I would do.
Alright, I don't think it's gonna happen anyway, so
yeah,
okay.
It's true. And if I was on a desert island, I'd have bigger problems than what I'm listening to, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you for the interview.
Yeah, man, thank you.
Would you mind a couple radio spots?
Let's do it.
Alright.